Welcome to Tough on Art, the podcast for artists interested in ways to get ahead in today's art market. I'm Jen Tough, owner of Jen Tough Gallery and the Artist Alliance community. Join me for some down-to-earth talk about the best ways for artists to navigate this new and different landscape. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tough on Art. This is Jen Tough. And I want to let you know before we get started that I'm offering a live one-day workshop, or almost one day, called The Tough Method for Getting Galleries. Now, if you're interested in getting galleries, you're definitely going to want to take this workshop because I'm going to tell you all the skinny. I'm going to give you the inside scoop. I'm going to make it really easy. I'm going to give you email scripts so you can just copy and paste the script to galleries and know when to do it, know what to send them and when to send them. It's a really great class that you're not going to want to miss. So if you want to get a gallery or you want to get more galleries, which I always highly recommend, don't miss this class. Saturday, March 26th, only $250, and this information is going to last you your entire life. Sign up at jentough.com, and on there you're going to have a link to register for the workshop, and I hope I see you on March 26th. Ellen Dieter was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. Her interest in art began at a really early age, and after graduating from high school, she began traveling in between studies at the Cleveland Institute of Art and the Cooper Union School of Art. Ellen settled in Paris, France for over a decade and studied part-time at L'École des Arts Appliqués. Over the years, Ellen has worked as a seamstress, designer in a leather shop, a fashion model in the U.S. and abroad, and has taught art for ages K through 9, a portfolio class for seniors, and workshops for adults. Working as a scenic artist for the Old Globe Theater in San Diego, Ellen found her love for painting large. In 2007, Ellen left the traditional workforce and started devoting all her time to her painting practice. Ellen's work is bright and colorful. Her abstracted figures and landscapes have a whimsical yet raw quality. Never one to shy away from a bright palette, Ellen's work reflects the sun-drenched world seen from her two home locations, San Diego and Hawaii. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hi, everybody. This is Jen. Welcome to Tough on Art. And today I have Ellen Dieter with me. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
So tell me where you are right now.
Right now I'm in my studio in San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm. And you also have, like the ideal life. I'm so envious, but I guess that sounds kind of harsh, but I mean, it sounds wonderful that you also get to spend a lot of time in Hawaii, which is one of my favorite places on earth.
Hawaii is pretty special. And I do, I live half the time in Honolulu and have a studio there as well.
That's so amazing. I love that. So how did that come to be for you? How did that work out for you?
So 15 years ago, I met a man.
What we said we weren't going to talk about, right?
Right. This is okay, though. No, I met him and we started seeing each other, and I was considering moving to Hawaii, you know, just upping and going. And my daughter got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And she's here in San Diego, and I wanted to be a grandmother since I was a kid. And I just couldn't leave San Diego. I couldn't go. So I was like, well, I'll come back and forth if that's okay, but I can't move.
Yeah.
Because I can't leave the grand. And I now have three grandsons.
Oh.
15 years later, I have three grandsons. And so that's why I go back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Well, it's a very nice lifestyle.
It is. I feel so grateful. I feel very blessed that I get to have this. I couldn't have ever predicted it. Didn't necessarily even want to do something like that, but
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Do you think that because your work is so colorful, do you think that your environment, both San Diego and Hawaii are obviously, you know, tropical in my mind. Do you think that that has played into like your palette and things like that and what you decide to paint?
I think it does. Definitely. Definitely. Because the colors are so rich, and especially in Hawaii. I mean, San Diego is also paradise, but in Hawaii, it's even more lush.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can tell what paintings were painted where.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Which is fascinates me because I feel like I just do the same thing wherever I am, but it still comes out different.
Somehow. Right. So you started out, were you born in Cleveland?
I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yay. Yeah. I'm an Ohioan too. I think everybody knows that, but
yeah.
Anyway, so tell me about that. What was that like growing up? Did you like school? Were you?
I did.
Artistic.
Yep. I took art in junior high and high school. My mom was artistic. She used to draw. And they were big supporters of my art and anything that I did. And I remember when I was going to go to art school, I had friends that wanted to go to art school as well. And their parents wouldn't let them. They couldn't major in art. They had to do something else because they didn't think that art would be sustainable.
Sure.
And my parents were, yeah, you do whatever, you go for it.
That's so great.
That was really cool.
What part of Cleveland were you from? Are you from?
So in elementary school, we lived in Warrensville Heights. And in high school, I moved to Shaker Heights.
Oh, okay. Have you seen Little Fires Everywhere yet?
I have seen it. I have read it. And it's really interesting. That's actually, my book club is going to read it again now. But that takes place after I left.
Yeah.
I grew up, I graduated in 74. And I think that storyline is in the 80s.
Yeah, 80s or 90s, right?
80s or 90s, yeah.
Yeah,
but
so
it's still the same streets and the same lakes and the same houses. Yeah. I can picture it. And I learned some stuff about Shaker that I didn't know when I read it.
Because
yeah. Because there's one street where they talk about where the duplexes are, but the houses are built so that they don't look like duplexes.
Right.
I didn't know that those were duplexes.
Yeah, you can't have duplexes in Shaker.
Shaker, no. But I can picture the street, but I didn't have, I guess I didn't know anybody on there, but I had no idea that those homes were duplexes.
Yeah. So I grew up in Upper Arlington, which is like the Shaker Heights of Columbus.
Right.
It's the same thing. Like it, even when I was watching Little Fires Everywhere, it's like, oh my God, it looks like Arlington, like the same light posts.
The trees, and
I think they had the same disgusting original covenants that Shaker Heights did. It was not very people of color or any. Right. Yeah, it was. Yeah. So anyway, we could probably go on and on about that. So you went to Cleveland Institute of Art, right?
Institute of Art. Yep.
Yeah.
The first I went to, there was a commercial school in Cleveland called Cooper School of Art.
Oh yeah. Uh huh. Yeah.
And I went there, I was took classes there while I was in high school, after school, and then took a year off to travel in Europe after I graduated, and then I came back to Cleveland Institute of Art.
So what kind of art were you making when you first got into art school? I mean, I know like a lot of it's just foundation stuff, but when you started making art, what was it looking like? Is it similar to what you're making now, or?
No, it was more realistic.
Really?
Oils. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very traditional and serious.
Traditional, trying to figure out.
Right. What did you paint? What kind of stuff did you paint?
I painted, my teachers would tell me I was an incurable romantic. I painted shells and I don't know, things of nature, but I guess the way I painted it was, I don't know where that came from, but
yeah.
And then after art school, I ended up moving to Paris, to
nice.
France.
You've lived in some horrible places.
Horrible places, yes. I painted in there, in Europe, I painted like the mountains and the cities, cityscapes and mountainscapes, and starting to go a little more towards an abstract way. But always places, and even now I paint places where I am or what I'm doing. You know, like I have a horse and rider series. Because I used to ride horses, and there's paintings that are like based after curves and roads, or the canyons in front of my house.
What do you think made the shift from realism to more abstract? Was there something that you can pinpoint, or was it just sort of a slow process?
I think it was kind of slow, but what happened also is I painted in oil. I was an oil painter, and I wanted to paint bigger. And by now I'm in San Diego. I want to paint bigger. And I have this, I think it was a 4-foot by 5-foot canvas on my easel. And I look at my little tubes of paint and my little brushes, and I'm like, this is not going to work. So I went to Home Depot and got some house paint and big brushes. And I was afraid of the canvas. I didn't want to ruin it. So I had this brown paper that I put on top of the canvas to play on. And I just started painting on the brown paper. And
wow.
I put music on it. And I just started making these big brush strokes on the brown paper.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while with acrylics. So that was my move into acrylic.
Do you like acrylics because they're more, you can be more adventurous like that and you don't have to wait?
Yeah. You can paint over it faster. It dries faster. So you can paint over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there something that sort of caused you to do that? I mean, you know, was there some like major change in your life, or was it just something that you felt like this would be something I really want to explore? Cause that's brave. Like, you know, going from, you know, the teeny tiny brushes to the big Home Depot, you know, that's bravery right there.
Well, I was somewhat brave. You know, I was protecting myself too by not painting on the canvas. I was painting because I still do. It's brown paper. It's 48 inches wide. And so I just take that and stretch it across the canvas because the canvas was so precious to me.
Mm.
And right. I didn't want to ruin it, heaven forbid, because all the canvases had to be a masterpiece in my mind.
Just a little pressure, right? Just a little.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I went into the acrylic painting and then painting on the paper, then I started to understand that I could just keep painting over it. Then I could get more texture. And so I eventually moved to actually painting on the canvas. But I have a whole bunch of rolls of brown paper paintings in the garage.
Do you find that when you're working, and maybe this was some sort of like mental divorce from, you know, your art school training, but do you find that, you know, you said that, you know, everything has to be perfect, you know, like you want the masterpiece for, do you think that sort of stems from art school? And do you hear like your professors, like sort of in the back of your head, like when you're creating or like, you can't do this, this isn't art? Or do you have any of that kind of thing that goes on and you just felt like you were liberated finally to?
I still have that going on. I don't like to follow the rules. There's certain rules that you do need to follow, especially if you're going to work with oils and acrylics, which I do still both.
Right.
But, I try to be brave and all that kind of stuff, but I still tell myself that I am an imposter and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to get found out one of these days that people don't, that I have no clue.
Yeah. Isn't it awful? I mean, so many women do that. We do that so much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have to, I think it's a challenge always to just get out of my head. I just have to get out of my own way.
Yeah.
And then it's fine. It's like, and when I'm in the process, when I'm actually painting, mm-hmm. the thoughts aren't there. Right. Because I'm making decisions about what I'm going to do or not do, or just like play.
Right.
And then, but when I step back and look at it, and it's like, oh, that's terrible.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I wonder, like with art school, that it can kind of ruin people, can kind of make you frozen, you know? Yeah. For a while, it seems like it took a while for you to detox. Starting in Paris, you kind of started detoxing from that.
Yes.
Sort of mindset, you know?
Yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, I don't really know, honestly, like, is going to art school a good thing if someone wants to be an artist?
I don't know. Well, you know, I didn't finish. I went for a number of years, but I never really finished.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You'd still be.
I don't know if it's good or not. I go back and forth. That's another question too. I ask myself is like, would it be better if I had a master's, or, you know, what are there more doors open for people with MFAs? You know,
yeah. I think the difference between BFA and MFA is that with the MFA, at least I would hope that you know, the artist gets to explore a little bit more about what they want to do. And there isn't so much of the noise that you get in BFA programs where you have to do certain things a certain way. And it can be kind of toxic and limiting. I mean, and yeah, I won't go into any more about that. Get myself in trouble.
Yeah, there was one point I thought I would go back to school and finish, but and get a master's. But then I just want to paint, so
yeah,
I just keep painting.
Yeah, and it's really it's super expensive. My God, yeah,
that too. And you reach a certain age, go like, how would I ever pay that back?
Yeah, totally. Or like, you know, what really? It seems like you're definitely on the right path that you don't need it. I would say, you know. I mean, you've got like, you know, how many galleries do you have? You have like two or three galleries already, right? That you're working with. Yeah, that's great. And your sales are fantastic.
The pandemic has been good for me.
How so? What do you mean?
I feel like people, because they're home, they're looking at their walls and they're buying more art. And they're not traveling, so they have this money that they can spend. I had more commissions in the last couple of years than I had before.
Yeah. And how do you handle commissions? Like, how do you get them? How do you do that process?
The commissions I've gotten, there's a woman I work with in Honolulu, an interior designer, and she hooks me up with different commissions. And then I've had a couple clients here in San Diego that have just come to me and they want to buy my art, but they want me to do something special for them. It's a challenge.
Yeah, it can be, right? Because
some people are easier to work with than others.
Yes, this is true. That's universal, right?
Yeah.
So let me go back a little bit. When you first started, you know, when you had your brown paper, your butcher paper, craft paper, whatever, and you started painting with the Home Depot stuff, how long was it before you felt like, okay, I can show these? And, you know, was it a year, or how were you feeling about that? Like, to get them out into the world?
So what happened with that is like, real soon after I started doing that, I ended up doing a collaboration project with two other artists, mm-hmm. Shala Dorofshan and Richard Messenger. And we would meet every Monday in my studio here and paint on the same surface at the same time and create a painting.
Oh,
and
wow.
We paint over each other's work, under it, we obliterated it. We added
like all simultaneously.
All simultaneously. We were sitting here on the wall painting, and we painted, I don't know, 20 some plus paintings. And we were using the brown paper. And then I bought some nicer paper, and then we did use some canvases too. But we did a show of that work at the San Diego Art Institute, mm-hmm. called Collaboration, where we put all of the paintings up. So it was kind of more the collaboration works that got out than my work by itself.
Right. But that was like a great first step, right? Because you could sort of introduce yourself as doing something different from realism. Yeah.
It was cool. We learned, this is another space where I learned a lot, because watching when you're painting with other people and you see what they do, and like Shala, oh my gosh, we would have a painting going and Richard and I would think it was great. And she would come in and just wipe it all down.
Ooh.
Wipe it off. And we're like,
that's going to be so hard.
She goes, that's okay. We'll come back. We'll do it better this next time.
Oh, wow.
So I learned how to let go a lot, and how to know that I can paint over something and recreate it and better or different. And it's okay to let go of the, you know, pieces that don't work.
Yeah. It's that preciousness that holds you back, right?
Yeah.
And that's like a forced, it's like, you know, throwing somebody in the pool and telling them to swim if they've never swum before, you know, it's like baptism by fire.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I would imagine that would either, that process would either be super fun or like really frustrating for people who couldn't let go. Right.
Yeah, it was both. And then at one point Richard felt like he was being teamed up on.
Oh, yeah.
He was the guy. And so we had to, it was as much of an artistic thing, it was an emotional process too.
Totally. And super psychological.
Communication, learning how to communicate with each other.
Yeah. And
pay attention to each other's feelings. But because we wanted to have a safe place to paint together.
Yeah.
We also want to be able to paint over somebody else's work and have your work being painted over and be okay with it.
Right.
Because you're all working towards the whole. And we got to a point, because we did this for a couple of years, mm-hmm. every Monday for a couple of years, and we didn't know who painted what on the work sometimes. And you couldn't tell because it was all just one person's painting done by three people.
Do you think that you guys kind of like sort of morphed into a similar style after that amount of time?
We took on each other's styles. Yeah.
That's interesting.
For a while.
Yeah.
I moved into I love the way Shala paints. So I moved into her looseness.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that.
It's hard. It's really
hard. Yeah, I can imagine. I would, you know, I guess, you know, and then you start sort of picking yourself apart, like, oh, I'm too controlling, or I'm too, you know, I can't deal with it when people, you know, take away my blob or whatever.
Then right.
Yeah.
Or you go into like, oh, I'm going to let them paint because they'll do it better than I can.
Yeah.
That's where I go. It's like, I think that they're better than. Everybody's always better than.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that you were able to do that after being, you know, a realist painter originally, you know, with oils and very precise and, you know, that kind of freedom to do something like that. That's intense. Do you think that helped you with creating now, like that being able to let go like that?
I do. Very much so. Mm-hmm. Being able to have, like I was saying, that to have people paint over my work, or me learning how to paint over my work again. Like if mm-hmm. I feel like it's starting to get too tight or something, I'll come in with a big brush and just go over it.
Yeah.
And I do take photos of my work along the way, so I can always look back and see if there's something I want to bring back into it.
Yeah. I've heard that from artists, many artists who say that that's a great tool to take a iPhone picture of your process, like before you change it and paint it all out or whatever. And it's a good record keeping thing. For sure.
Yeah. I like to take pictures, also photos, to check the balance. I'll put it into a black and white scale so I can see where the lights and darks are.
Oh, cool.
I don't always see it as with the color.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What a great idea. And it kind of gives you a different way of looking at it too.
Yeah.
Like when you leave something for a while and then come back to it.
Come back to it. The other thing you can do is I paint in the dark.
Really?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Wow. What you mean, like not total dark.
Not total darkness, but like I'll have the light on in the kitchen so I can see back here. But
what does
only
that do for you?
I don't know. It's just a different way of painting, of letting go.
Yeah, kind of. Well, I mean, it would probably get
better. Then it's just really working with values and not the color so much.
Yeah. That's trippy. I mean, it's sort of like you saying that, you know, turning it into black and white, and then you can see the tonal differences and stuff. That's fascinating. So do you work on more than one piece at once?
I do.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I get stuck on one piece and I beat it to, you know, I just work on it until I finish it. But it's better if I have at least two pieces going. So I could step away from it for a minute and then come back and see it again. Mm-hmm. And then leaving, because I leave for Hawaii every couple months.
Yeah.
I like having a piece on the wall or on my easel that's in process so that when I come back to it, I see it fresh and I can say whether it's done or not.
Yeah. That's definitely a benefit of having to
step away for a couple months. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something's not working. Do you do the same thing? Like, oh, this just isn't working. I'm going to stick it there and come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's super interesting. So have you found that, cause your work to me just sort of exudes joy just in so many different ways. Do you feel like, and I know like painting isn't always 100% joyful, but do you feel that your process is in general a joyful experience compared to when you were doing more realism?
So I liked painting when I was painting realism. When I was in Paris and painting, mm-hmm. it was a slower process, but I just enjoy the being in that space of painting, no matter what it is. I do like, though, back then I was painting smaller. I paint bigger now. I like to paint bigger. I like to have music going when I'm painting. I like to like feel like I'm dancing mm-hmm. across the canvas.
Well, it comes across.
At least going for a walk.
Yeah. So what do you like to do besides making art and painting? What other kind of things do you enjoy doing?
Well, spending time with my grandsons.
Yeah. And how old are they now?
13, 8, and 1.5.
Oh, that's a great spread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so fun. Let's see. I love swimming. When I'm in Hawaii, I swim every morning and I walk on the beach. I like going for walks. I like hiking. I did do a lot of horseback riding, but I haven't done that for a couple years. But I love the horses. And and now I feel like I paint a lot of horse and riders because I'm not riding. So it's my way of being with the horses. It's like by painting them.
Yeah. So do you get to see lots of turtles when you're swimming in Hawaii?
Not a ton. Where I swim, they aren't there. Although I did have one come in and I swam with him for a little bit. That was pretty cool.
Oh God. That's like, I did that in Kauai and it was like one of the best experiences of my life. And last time we were in Kauai, we saw a little teeny baby one.
Oh my gosh.
It was so cute.
I haven't seen baby ones. And I know people always swim with the turtles. And it's funny because I swim always in the same place and there's not turtles. But one day we were there and there was this turtle that had come into our swimming hole.
Oh.
And it was like, I swam with her. She swam back out and I swam with her for quite a distance. And then I pulled back just right next to her and I pulled back and she kind of looked back at me and mm-hmm. then kept going on her way. It was magical.
Yeah, I know. It is magical. That was like one of the best experiences of my life. Like, you know. Yeah. Swimming with turtles. Turtle. It's so fun. Yeah, there's a lot in Kauai. Maybe there's just not that many in where you are, like in that part of Honolulu, maybe. Or I don't know.
I swim on the South Shore and I think they're more on the North Shore.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, it sounds like a beautiful life. It sounds very nice. So what are your career plans? What are you moving towards? What do you see yourself doing? What are your dreams and goals?
I have a dream of a solo museum in a major art museum. I mean, a solo exhibit in a major art museum.
Nice.
My dream.
Yeah.
I did do a solo at the Oceanside Museum of Art.
Yeah.
But I'm so honored and thrilled that that happened. I did a meditation once in the art museum that I had the solo show in my meditation was the Cleveland Museum of Art, obviously being from Cleveland.
Right.
And then someone said, well, why not you dream bigger? Like, why not the MoMA in New York or Paris or something? Okay, why not?
Well, the museum in Cleveland is awesome.
It's an awesome museum. It's such an amazing museum.
Yeah, totally amazing. And, you know, a lot of people don't think that about Ohio in general. You know, like when I first moved to LA and I lived in LA for most of my adult life and people were like, they found out I'm from Ohio. I'm like, oh, did you grow up on a farm? Like totally legit questions. Like, no, you know, like, my dad was a physicist actually, you know, like what? But people have a, you know, they have a really misconception. Cleveland is great. I love Cleveland so much more than Columbus as a city. And yeah. So many people love Columbus now. I'm like, what? What? Why? Cleveland has a lot going on, I think.
I think so too. Well, the Cleveland Museum of Art was at one point one of the 10 best museums in the United States.
Yeah.
And my uncle was the architect on the renovation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We have the symphony.
Yep. A really good one.
Really good symphony.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. I don't know. I think Cleveland's pretty.
Yeah. Cleveland is, it just has so much character, I think. It's such an old city, an old money.
Old city, old money. I have, so when I was married to a Frenchman, which is why I lived in France for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time he came to Cleveland and I took him to the museum, because I love the museum and I always go, he was shocked.
Yeah.
And he's, these are all originals? It's like, because there's Monet's and there's a whole Rodin museum, that room that they, with all the Rodin sculptures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was shocked. He said, yep, this is the Cleveland Museum of Art. It's pretty cool. And the lagoon out in front.
Yeah, it's really nice. And there's so much, there is a lot of culture and diversity and just like everything I love in a city. I love how old Cleveland is. And yeah. I love that it was sort of everyone teased it so much for so long. And it kind of just like came back sort of from, you know, the days when the river caught on fire.
On the lake and the river that caught on fire. Yeah. We had t-shirts that said, Cleveland, you've got to be tough.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh my God. I have to have one of those. Do you still have it?
I don't. It was a tank top I had that I had.
Yeah. Cleveland, you got to be tough. That's awesome. I love that. Yeah. I would actually consider moving back to Cleveland, believe it or not.
I have thought about it. When my mom was going to move into a retirement place, I told her, I said, I'll move back and stay with you so you don't have to do that. And mm-hmm. she didn't want me there.
Oh,
I know. She was very independent.
Yeah.
So to move into a retirement home, which was her choice, she could keep her independence. If I was there, then she'd feel, I don't know, obligated or something.
Yeah.
She ended up moving out here to California.
Oh, well, that's good.
When she was 80 something, I think she moved out to California.
Yeah.
To home out here.
Is your mom still around? No, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's hard. That's awful. Cleveland is great. And I love being from Ohio. I used to sort of shy away from it, but now I'm like, yeah, I'm from the Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest rocks. People are, well, Midwesterners are nice.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
Well, we can go in another direction with that one too, but we won't.
I'm still in touch with my friends from high school. You know, like I just saw my friends, just they live in, well, one's in DC and one's in North Carolina, my two best girlfriends. And I just saw them a few months ago in North Carolina and we're still super tight. You know, we text each other all the time, every day. And, you know, it's people in the Midwest are different. Like one thing that I totally miss too are the bars.
The bars?
Cleveland or Columbus bars. They're just no frills. You just, there's no pretension. You just, you know, you go in there and you have a fucking drink and there's no like.
Yeah. And some crap. Bars were, in Cleveland, there was a bars where we'd go that had live music. We would go and drink and dance and drink and dance. And,
yeah. What was that?
Down in the flats.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. What was that one? There was one bar. My sister went to Cleveland Institute of Art. So, and there was one bar we used to go to all the time near school.
Near Case, near the, okay.
It was in between Case and
Sky.
Maybe. But they always had live music and it was like, I had to have a fake ID and all that to get in, you know, but whatever.
The Brick is where all the bands come through.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. But it was fun. God, yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, it was very fun. Those were good times.
Yeah, they were. So how long were you in Paris? You said it was a long
10
time.
Years.
10 years?
I was in Germany for a year and a half and then Paris for 10 years.
Were you in Berlin or?
Düsseldorf.
Oh, never been there. Yeah. How was that? And why was that? Why were you in Germany?
I used to model.
Oh, yes. I read this on your thing. What? Tell me about that. How did that happen?
I was working in a restaurant in Cleveland and this photographer asked me if I wanted to be a model.
Some sort of date rape thing right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I remember when I first met him, I had somebody come with me, right?
Yeah.
Make sure. And so he, we did a number of photographs and then he introduced me to the major photographers in Cleveland and I put together a portfolio and I ended up working in one of the photo studios as a photographic assistant.
Oh, that's cool.
I put together my modeling portfolio. And then I started modeling and then I started going to Chicago and modeling there. Mm-hmm. And then this modeling agency from Düsseldorf came to Chicago looking for girls or models and they chose me. And so I went to Düsseldorf.
Nice.
To model. And then I did some work in Paris too.
Wow. And that's what, did you meet your husband in Paris or in Düsseldorf?
I met him in Cadaqués, Spain.
Oh, you're like the total globe-trotting model. Like, wow.
I met him. I kind of met him before I started. I can't remember the timeline. Hmm. Yeah. We met in Spain at a Club Med.
Uh-huh.
Where I was traveling. And then,
okay, that's all you have to say because we're not going to talk about men.
Okay, yeah.
So that's great. I mean, you've had such a super interesting life and now you're loving it and just, you know, San Diego and Hawaii, that's like a dream come true. You think you'll settle in one place or the other?
I think I have, my roots are pretty ingrained here in San Diego.
Yeah.
But I don't like to say never.
Right. Yeah. Never. I mean, why give it up?
Every once in a while I think, oh, I should just go live in Hawaii. But I feel like artistically there's more opportunity on the mainland than in Hawaii. I just am more connected to different art places here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's harder to get to from Hawaii. I know there's artists that live, you know, big time artists that live in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, it's so expensive. I mean, not that San Diego is cheap, but
yeah.
And
I don't know. I know my grandkids will grow up and they'll be more distant. So maybe there, but like the little one's only a year and a half. So I got a lot of time to spend with them.
Aw, that's so awesome. I actually can't wait to be a grandmother either, but my daughter's only 16. So there's no hurry, but she's already decided she absolutely does not want kids. She's only going to be a dog mom and I'm okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm okay with that too.
You're like, my grandsons, they got a puppy for Christmas. So.
Oh, really?
A husky.
Oh, that's the best.
She's so cute. They named her Storm.
Aw, sweet. Mm-hmm. Very sweet. So Ellen, it was so great for you to hang out with me. Thank you
for having me.
It was nice to just chat and compare Cleveland notes. And it's always nice to talk to an Ohio girl.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Ohio. We used to go to Columbus for the charity newsies.
What the hell is that?
It's a motorcycle race.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. That makes me, I'm a bad Columbus person. I think I just want to say I'm from Cleveland from now on because I like Cleveland so much better.
You're from Cleveland. We go down to Columbus for motorcycle races. My dad was a biker.
Oh, really? Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about that.
Is this something that they've been doing a really long time? Charity newsies.
I don't know if they still do it, but back in the 70s, they were doing it.
Huh. I don't know. My dad's a super nerd. So, you know, we didn't have that kind of, that kind of exciting, you know, sporty or whatever.
Stuff. Yeah. No, my dad. Yeah. He was into motorcycles and hanging out with the kids.
Yeah. That's great. Well, yeah. I'll have to look that up and see what Charity Newsies is.
Charity Newsies.
But no, yeah. I don't think I'll go to Cleveland with you, but I don't know.
Let's go to Cleveland. Yeah. Hit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and
yeah.
Go yep. Check all the streets and little fires everywhere.
Yep. I know. They probably get tons of people now, right? All the looky-loos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to hang out at the duck pond.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Ellen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting this podcast. Your support means everything. If you'd like to learn more about the Artist Alliance community, send me a question, or learn about other events or projects coming up, please visit my website at www.gentuff.gallery. See you next time.